Better work presentations are possible. They're called Canva presentations. You can supercharge your work decks with Canva presentations. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Just start with a prompt and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds, or with a stunning template and add images, graphics, charts, and data visualizations from their massive media library. You save time and you wow your audience. Mm-hmm. I have never made one of these presentations and I never will, but there's a reason why Canva is used by 90% of the Fortune 500 companies. 90%!
That's a lot of percent.
Yeah, let's get it to 100%, guys. Come on. Nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations by heading to canva.com.
Designed for work.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hear me?
I did. I heard you.
And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need. You just say that and they show up. They come jumping out of a shrub.
Oh, cool.
No matter where you are in life, when you need the coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, my name is W. Kamau Bell, and I feel cautiously optimistic, but not so great about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
What? What?
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. This is the start of season 3 of this podcast. I cannot believe it's been 3 seasons already. It is just flying by because it is honestly, no joke, one of the most fun experiences I've ever had. I'm really enjoying it. And here are two of the people that add a lot to the joy of doing this job. I'm medicated, by the way. That's why I'm coming across.
That explains it.
My assistant, Sona Movsesyan. Hey, Sona.
Hi.
How are you?
It's good to be back.
It is good to be.
Season 3.
It is good to be back. And of course, our producer, engineer. You're not an engineer. You're a producer.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Extraordinaire. Does a very good job. He's the maestro. I call him Matt Gourley. And I think that's because it's your name.
It is
right?
My, yeah, you did it well.
Oh,
that's my name.
I thought I'd come up with an interesting nickname. And then someone told me, no, that's just your name.
That's actually it, yeah. Well, it's good to be back.
I have to say, I don't know if it's because of, and I think maybe it is partially because of quarantine and everything, but also because I really love doing this. I didn't want to be away from it that long.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. And boy, am I jonesing to connect with people.
<I know. laughs>
We did a podcast a couple of weeks ago with Tom Hanks. It's just kind of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might think, well, why wasn't that the start of the season? And I think it's because he's not a big enough star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need to aim higher.
Yeah. I IMDb'd him and it was like, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess you've done stuff.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure who he is.
I know. No, that was an amazing, that was just a treat for the middle of the summer.
Awesome.
And, but I am really excited to be back.
Yeah.
And I promise this season to be a little less filtered, a little less kind and polite to the both of you.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah.
What a change. What a drastic change.
Oh, no.
No, I...
And I'm, we will be... not as respectful and kind to you.
Our promise to you.
Yeah. Your solemn oath is that you will treat me with the contempt that I deserve.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I come from home and we're working at Earwolf Studios here in Los Angeles and no one's here. Everything's been cleaned. We're doing it very responsibly. And Gourley, you are not with me right now.
No.
And Sona, you are with me, but you're more than 6 feet, which is the way you've always liked it.
Yeah, I always like to maintain this distance. At least, not even six, at least 10 feet.
Yeah.
You know.
When I met Sona, she said 10 feet, please. And that was 10 years ago, long before. So she knew something.
Mm-hmm.
No, so it's really nice to be here. But it's funny. I get the same amount of I don't want to say contempt, but sort of healthy skepticism from everybody. Yeah. So I'm at home with my kids. My son is 14 and everything is boomer, boomer. Anytime I make a mistake, he's on me. And my daughter's really good at a kill you like side eye. And they're not interested. And not long ago, my wife wasn't in the house and I was there and I was in charge. And I tried to do a bit with them. And so I was like, kids, let's get together. And I really committed to it. Come here, everybody, come here. And they both came together. And they were like, what? And my son said, is this a bit or is it real? And I really committed to it. And I said, guys, no, I'm really serious. Look. And when I said look, they both went, it's a bit, and walked away. And it was a bit. I was going to go on a long bit about how I don't feel that I'm being given the respect that your mother gets. And I wasn't serious, but it's because I put up my hands in a little bit of a tell. I put up my hands and went, look. And they were both at the same time said, it's a bit, and walked their separate ways.
They've developed bit dar.
They have bit dar. I remember when my daughter was 4, she said something like, I said like, well, I think we're going to have this ice cream's going to be really good. And my daughter, who's 4 at the time, said, cut to, what happened? And I said, cut to.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited we're back.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited because today is a absolutely hilarious comedian and writer who is the host and executive producer of the Emmy award-winning CNN series United Shades of America. He's also the author of the book The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell and has a stand-up special on Netflix, Private School Negro. I'm thrilled he is with us. W. Kamau Bell, welcome. Okay, I understand cautiously optimistic because that should be anyone's approach to me. I understand that. But what do you mean not so great? What's that all about?
I don't know if it's a real invitation, Conan. I understand it's a podcast, but I in this time of coronavirus and pandemic, I could use a new friend, but I feel like maybe this is just a hustle. But it's, which is fine, but I just want to be prepared for that.
If it is a hustle, it's my side hustle.
I understand. Oh, I understand.
And I only know that term because Sona is always talking about her side hustles. And so I love that term. I mean, I'm always saying, why were you late? And she'll be like, I was doing a voiceover for an anime cartoon. It's my side hustle. And so, yes, my side hustle might be getting you to be my friend.
Maybe I'll give you some new terminology. I will be your side piece to your side hustle. I don't know if you know that one.
I've always dreamed of a side piece, but no, I thought it was like a side piece of land that I would own that was adjacent to my property. And so I would say to my wife, I really want a side piece, and she would slap me really hard. And I would say, no, the small plot of land near our home is for sale.
And I would like to move my girlfriend onto
it. Yeah, yeah. And I what a great place for my mistress. Then I would get slapped again and I would say, I don't understand what's going on. No, I'll tell you why I would like us to be friends. And I do say this sincerely. I think we have a lot of things in common. I really do. And then I started reading a little bit about your past and I found out that in a weird way, you grew up sort of the way I did, meaning you were kind of unsure how you fit into the world. And if I had to say there was one thing that has turned out to be a gift in my adult life, it's that when I was a kid, I didn't have a niche. I didn't know where I fit. People would assume maybe for a second that I was a good athlete until I quickly tried to hold the ball or do something with it. And I kept thinking, people would say, well, are you a full-on nerd? And I'd go like, no, I don't think I am. Well, are you the Archie Andrews sort of popular guy? Not really, no. Are you good with the girls? I don't know. What do I do? I don't know who I am. Is that your experience a little bit? Or why don't you tell me?
Nothing of that is my experience. No,
actually, wow, you totally destroyed me. I was captain of the football team.
Yeah. I actually still play pro sports. I'm going to the NBA bubble. I'm starting for the Orlando Magic. I don't know how you didn't find all this stuff out.
Oh, here it is. It's the second page. Shit.
My Wikipedia is pretty long.
You know what? You know what I should do is I should look at the second page before I start talking to people. That's on me. me. I really apologize. But yeah, can you relate to the?
No, I'm an only child. I moved around a lot with my mom, so I always felt like an outsider. And when I was by myself, I felt totally comfortable. But then when I'd be around other people, I would be acting comfortable. They'd be like, "That's weird. Why are you acting that way?" And so I learned to sort of like, I got to keep this, whatever this is, I got to keep it to myself. So yeah, I definitely was not the popular kid. But I was also not the straight A student, even though people sort of thought I was because I was quiet and bookish, but I was not like, you know, so I did have a like, I don't know where I'm going to fit in this life. I wanted to be a comedian, but, you know, we're of that generation where it's like you couldn't Google what that was or how
right,
to do it.
Right.
So you just sort of was like, maybe one day I'll accidentally fall into a comedy club. I didn't know how to, you know, how to make that happen. So. Yeah, I didn't know what I went to college to be an East Asian studies major just because I liked Bruce Lee. Like there was just no like.
Well, first of all, that is the path to comedy for most of us. All of us got into East Asian studies and because of Bruce Lee. And then the next thing you know, we're doing comedy. But
Yeah.
You spent some of your youth in Boston, didn't you?
I did. I was in Boston from around like 4 to 12 or so. Yeah, about 4 to 12. So I have formative years in Boston, but it's been such a long time that I was there. It feels weird to say that I was, you know, that I'm from Boston. I wouldn't say that. But yeah, I feel really good because I got to spend some time in some key racist places in America.
Right.
I know. So for my career, it's like it's good to have spent some time in Boston because it's like that's one of America. That's a specific type of racism there. So,
I've never heard anyone mention racism in Boston in the same sense.
That's why I don't feel great about our friendship.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I grew up in, I lived in Mattapan. I don't know if you know Mattapan.
Sure. Yeah. I went to a public school and it was the height of busing when I was there. In the 70s, and there was a picture that you know, when people talk about racism in Boston, and I still go back to Boston because my parents live there in Brookline, and I've heard people sort of almost kind of want to resist that Boston had racial issues, and I think the most iconic racist photograph of the 70s.
I know exactly what you're about to say. I think
it is as if a couple of people sat around and thought for like 10 days and said, how can we enact the most racist scenario possible? And I think you know what I'm talking about, which is...
It's almost like Tarantino helped brainstorm it. It's like something from a Tarantino movie.
But you know what? If Tarantino did it, critics would say, that part's too far-fetched. And it's a real photo. And we're laughing. I mean, obviously, it's horrific. But during the height of the busing and fighting about race and everything, there was some kind of demonstration or something in downtown Boston, and this very well-dressed black gentleman, I think he's got a briefcase, he's a lawyer, he's a professional, he was walking through, and this mob was really angry, and three guys grabbed an American flag and try and charge him and like try to stab him with an American flag. Now I'm not sure, but I don't think he was hurt, but someone took a picture and won a Pulitzer, and it's like, yeah, two white Bostonians trying to charging and trying to, and using the American flag as a weapon against this man who's clearly just on his way to work or back from work. It's a disturbing image, but it's also,
it's almost beautiful in how perfect it is to go, is there racism in America? Hold on. Have you seen this photo?
Oh, yeah.
It's like
it sums it up in one image, and the fact that the photographer caught it, because it's like the perfect moment.
Yes.
Oh, are you looking at it right now?
I'm looking at it. Yeah. It's horrifying.
Oh, Sona's looking it up.
Yeah.
But also it is the irony in that photo. And you do think, okay, if I encountered anybody who said, I don't think there's racism, I'd say, tell me what you see when you see this photograph. Mm-hmm. If they looked at it and went, well, they're just trying to show the man the American flag with the pointy end pointed towards him. That's just a coincidence. And they're trying to show it to him quickly because clearly he's a professional and has things to do. And you're like, fuck you.
No, that's when people ask, why did your family move out of Boston? I'd say, you look at that picture. That's why my family moved out of Boston.
That's all you needed.
No, my mom really did get sort of sick of Boston and that aspect of it, because she felt like it's also so so provincial there that even the black people of Boston act like they came over on the Mayflower in a weird way. So she was like, even they're not really on my side.
Well, they look down at you. Look down at you because, yeah.
You're not a, you haven't, your family wasn't brought here on the boats when my family was brought here on the boats. So you can't come to my social gathering.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be on the same team. I don't know about that. So, yeah. So we moved from Boston to Chicago, which was which my mom literally was like, I need to go to a blacker place where the black people are cool. And so Chicago in 1984 was that place.
But, you know, it's also, it's funny because I sense that we had probably similar interests, you know, growing. Like, there's something about insecurity at an early age, just not knowing what your niche is, not having a niche, is really good for developing comedy muscle. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think feeling like an outsider in every place you're, every room you're in is a really great muscle, is a really great way to develop comedy. Because it's, you feel dysfunctional and there's ways to process that dysfunction. And comedy is a great way to sort of balance out your feeling of dysfunctionality. Like, it's a great way to go. If you can be funny, you can make yourself feel normal for a little while. That's how I talked about it. Like, I really felt like being an only child is actually, if all things being equal, if there wasn't a sense of like structure and society and caste system in America, only child would be the way I would identify myself, because I feel like that's the thing that ultimately I feel like separates me from other people, is that I grew up being my own best counsel, my own company, and feeling like I was always sort of on the outside of people, of other people. So, but you know, that's, America doesn't ask, police don't pull you over for being an only child, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Hey, let's hope we can get to that point.
That's how we get to that.
You know,
did you get to watch only the TV you want? Not have to share. Step out of your car, sir. Step out of your car. Did you never have to fight for dessert? Please. Step out of your car, sir.
Get out. Keep your hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
It's clear you never wore clothes that were worn by anyone else first.
Yeah.
Called
in backup.
You know, it's funny you say that because the people that were supposed to be my clique were not my clique. What was your situation? Can you relate to that?
Yeah. No, I can, because I mean, it's funny. I feel like when I'm basically the same age as hip hop, like hip hop started around the same time I was born, and sort of like, so I remember when like Rapper's Delight first went on the radio, and I was like memorized every word. And then weirdly, I was like, that's enough hip hop for me. And I never really engaged again until like the 90s when I started. But so when hip hop was really booming, I was more interested in the Young Comedian special on HBO.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I was just more interested in like, I was like, yes, that's a good song by N.W.A. But have you seen Jan Karam's new set?
I love that pretty soon after Rapper's Delight, you decided, I think that's it for rap.
I got it. Like, I was like,
also, this isn't going any further.
It's a fad.
There's no long-term money in this.
Yeah. I was like Charlton Heston. This isn't music.
You know, it's so funny. I always think of you as kind of like Charlton Heston in so many ways.
Yeah, I do. That's what we, you know, I am also a spokesperson for the NRA. Yeah. So I just keep it on the low because it doesn't match with the.
Do you ever, let me ask you something quickly. Do you ever, because you have that really good comedy brain, do you ever fantasize about or get tempted to do something that completely wouldn't fit what people think about you? Just, do you know what I mean? Like, I'll just register for the NRA just because it will fucking freak people out. And then I'll stick with it.
I think most of being a comedian at some point is learning like, nope, that's not you. That's not for you. That's not for like, cause all the thoughts are equal at some point in your head. And then if you get lucky and have a career, then your career sort of goes in a direction. And some of those thoughts that you used to grab on just cause they were fun, you gotta like, nope, I gotta let that one go. You know, I gotta let that one slide. That's not, I think about things all the time that I was like really committed to and thankfully never recorded anywhere. Like, you know, like, I would cancel myself. Like, I thought that was a really funny idea.
Yeah.
I was gonna turn that into a song. Whoa, you know, so yeah. So I think that people don't really understand that, like, as comedians, at some point, it's all just material. It's all just sort of like clay that you're working with. But then when you have a career, you go, this is the clay that I sell. This is not. And so, but when I'm with my friends, we say all sorts of things that, you know, and that's why I think it's good to have those friends. You can say all those things and they don't go, hold on, I got to go call TMZ. You know, they just, you know, they actually just let you be you.
Right. Now, okay, you mentioned TMZ. Just before we got on the call, you mentioned that you had a run-in with TMZ.
And well, this was actually, coming out of a comedy club. But this was actually an interview that I did for TMZ on the TMZ TV show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you went to TMZ. I see. I've never done that.
They invited me.
They invited you. I didn't know they had a building. I wasn't aware. This isn't an office. This is an alley. it's the best we have. Just sit on that chair. That's a box.
Years ago, I was doing a show in Nashville, and the show did not go great. And I came out of the club, and I was just like, ugh. And outside of the club was some guy with a camera. He goes, hey, I'm Nick from TMZ. I got a couple questions for you. And I'm like, how bad is your beat that you're in Nashville, home of some of the biggest country music stars in the world, and you were sent to Kamau Bell's show? Like, what? And I just feel bad for you. I just feel like Taylor Swift, Blake Shelton, some guy named Bubba. There's all these people you could talk to. And you came to the W. Kamau Bell show. But yesterday it was actually, I've been interviewed by TMZ. They call me for interviews like once when I'm promoting United Shades. And it's weird. I was always afraid of like, why would they want me on TMZ? But they clearly use me as the like, when you have a fancy meal and they give you the cucumber or whatever to sort of like clear your palate. It's like the like where we want to, they use me to have the smart conversations and they go back to the other stuff.
You know what? It's probably like there's a government mandated, there has to be at least 30 seconds of intelligence in the show. You know, you just talked to Snooki while she was getting up off the sidewalk wearing only a thong and throwing up. And so we've got to just quickly cut away to Kamau Bell.
And then like Harvey Levin's like, Kamau, how do we solve structural racism in America? Well, thank you for asking, Harvey. And it's like he clearly reads the books and knows what's going on.
Right.
But, you know, you can't ask those questions of, one of those people whose names I don't know because I don't try to follow that stuff. Kardashian.
It'd be great if you just started. You had an incredible deep knowledge.
I mean, it's probably deeper than I want to admit, but it's not that deep. I know which Kardashian is which. I did an event. This was when I first got to CNN and did United Shades, there was like a Hollywood reporter roundtable, reality television roundtable. And this was years ago, and you'll know how it was years ago. They called me to do it, and they said that like Tony Bourdain was going to be there. And I was like, oh, well, I'll definitely do it because I hadn't met him yet. I'd had the show on United States for a year. And I was like, great, I get to hang out with Tony. I haven't met him and I've been a fan of his since before I had the show. And then I got there and it was a bunch of other reality television people. And I got there and Tony is standing on the corner talking to the publicist from CNN. And she's this little tiny lady and he's this tall guy. And she's like pointing in his face, like clearly like sort of like, like browbeat, like looking like a teacher talking to a student who just failed. And I expected more of you. And he just sort of looks like, And then I walk up like, hey, man. He's like, yeah, I got to go. And he leaves. What? And then I walk in and he just does it. So he doesn't do the event. And I walk in and she's like, he had some previously scheduled business. And I'm like, I can tell a lie when I hear it. and then I walk into where we're recording the interview and I walk past like the green rooms and has everybody's name on a piece of paper. And one of them says Krish Kardashian. And I was like, oh, shit. Because I knew he hated the Kardashians.
Right.
And I'm like, he left because Chris Kardashian, because I didn't know Chris Kardashian was going to be there either. And I think she got booked at the last minute. And he's like, I can't sit. And I found out he was like, I can't sit at a table with a member of the Kardashian family.
Wow. Right. And he just walked out.
And he just bounced. And I just thought it was one of the greatest things of all time that I would even now.
Wait a minute. Greatest things of all time.
All time. My list of greatest things of all time.
I want to hear the other greatest things of all time.
I had a good bowl of cereal this morning. the almond milk to pecan ratio is really perfect. I think I really nailed it. I have a bunion on my foot that's healing up nicely.
Wow.
Yeah.
So these beat the discovery of fire as a way to...
100%.
Okay. 100.
I wasn't there for that, so maybe it wasn't that great. I saw Andy Bourdain leave a scene in Publicist because he didn't want to stomach a Kris Kardashian. I saw that happen, and I was like... That dude is knows who he is, and I wish I had that much integrity. Anyway, I'm going to go in there and talk to Kris Kardashian. And at the end of this event, it was like me, RuPaul, her, some other people, Leah Remini. Kris Kardashian gave everybody gift bags.
Oh.
Like, which I was like handed everybody, like, and like was like...
Wait, and,
it was
and just, she's just invited? I mean, she's not hosting the thing. She's
no,
not.
She really just showed us all up to go, you didn't bring a gift bag?
Wow.
I brought gift bags, and she had gift bags of like whatever Kylie's new lip kit was. She had gift bags
well, wait,
for everybody.
That's not really a gift bag.
I mean, it was makeup that was hard to get.
My father has a brick business. Here's a brick. It's got my the name of my father's brick business on it.
I still had not ever seen anybody hand out random gift bags that weren't a kid's birthday party or a wedding. So I was pretty impressed at the time. And she was like, give this to your wife. And I was like, how does she know I have a wife? Like, they have like, do you have a dossier? Like, why
oh
do you?
Oh my God. Yeah,
there was a, so. When we were, you were there too, when I did Bonnaroo years ago.
Yeah.
And the big thing there was this big trailer. And I'm trying to think of who it was. Was it like Dr. Dre or it was like a
Jay-Z?
It was Jay-Z.
Yeah.
It was Jay-Z had this giant tractor trailer truck that was all fitted out with air conditioning and everything. And people were invited to go in and they could pick out whatever they wanted. And I'm never like to take anything because it's very complicated. But this way I feel like I have to write a note. I mean, I don't understand how it all works. And so even if someone gave me like, here's a free coaster, you know, that says the name of their podcast on it, I then think I have to. Well, I can't get rid of it. I got to keep it. So it's all very loaded for me. So I was just sitting down in like a fold out chair nearby and they have this crazy security outside and there's a really long line and the security guys keep saying, Conan, come on, you want to come in, cut the line and you can, because they recognize me, want to come in. And I went, I'm good, guys. I'm okay. And they're like, no, it's Jay-Z's. It's like all of his best shit and you can take whatever you want. I'm fine, but I thank you very much. And I was in this really sad little chair sitting in the sun and they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. And everyone else's. And they kept saying like, they'd talk to each other and go like, hey, seriously, man, you should come in here. There's like a car in here. You could have it. I will decline at this moment.
We have family members you haven't seen in a long time in here.
Please just tell Mr. Z that I appreciate it and I...
There are people in here who owe you money who have come to give you the money back.
Someone here has your medication that you need to keep your heart beating. If you could just please again tell Mr. Z that it just didn't work out.
Mr. Z.
But I do appreciate.
They just need your signature on a cure for cancer. Just right in here. That will sign it. We'll have it.
No, wait a minute. I love that you took us there. I love they have a cure for cancer, but it can't be released until I sign it.
We've got a notary waiting for you.
Look, we're leaning out of the booth. We're leaning out of the place so that it's inches from your hand. And we've extended a pen. And if you just push the pen, that legally, I couldn't possibly. A child in here is dying of leukemia.
Oh, my God.
Also, there's a make-your-own sundae bar. I just can't.
So I have a question for you, because you must love getting to do, clearly, I mean, just hanging with you, I'm like, okay, There are comedy people who like to go off quietly in a corner and think about it, and they're kind of shy. And then there's people, I think, like you and me, who really love to just fuck around. And and then we love to riff like that for a long time. Yeah. And so where do you get that day in and day out? Because obviously you have people that you work with, but do you have a group of really funny people in your life where you sit around and you can just generate ideas and come up with stuff. Yeah. And how does that work for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're not funny, then you're not really worth a damn as a friend of mine. Let's be clear about that. I just want to be, you can be smart, you can be righteous, you can be, you need to be funny.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I have, I think that like, for example, one of my closest friends is a comedian named Dwayne Kennedy, mm-hmm. who I've known since I started doing comedy in Chicago. And one of the great things about my career is that now I can like hire him to like, he works in United Shades. He worked on Totally Biased and he goes on tour with me when I'm getting my stand up back together. And really it's just like, and really on United Shades, basically his job is to just sit in the van and talk to me while I wait to go talk to like the KKK. Like that's basically his job is right. to just sort of be around so I can stay loose. And so, cause otherwise if I get to, and also, and we're not talking about the interviews a lot of times. We're just like riffing and talking.
Right. You're warming up. You're stretching. Yeah. You're just having fun. And I feel like the funniest stuff often happens in the van or mm-hmm. in the green room or backstage. These things happen that are just absolute gold, and that's what makes them special.
And it's really like for comics, it's like legitimate. You had to be there moments. Like nobody can take a bit from this. Nobody's working on a bit. It's just us sort of like musicians having a jam session. Like we're just in here playing together.
Yeah.
And you know, and so for me, that's the one thing about like that. When I think about what did I get out of this? Like, you know, cause the showbiz is hard and it makes you crazy, but like, I definitely know that I've laughed more because of my chosen profession than I would have laughed if I hadn't been in this, you know?
Right.
And there's a lot to be said for that. Cause I do think it is a healthy thing to do to laugh. And now with my kids, like my oldest is 9, my middle is 5 and a half. They know the power of being funny. And so now we're being funny together.
Yes.
And like, you know, like it's just, and so now we have like bits that we do like that, like sort of like that is now fun on its own, even in a kid way. It's like, I'm like, oh, like my daughter has now does the thing that comics who do comedy for like 10 years do, where if I say something, she'll be like, that's funny.
Without laughing.
Without laughing.
I love that.
That's funny. Like it's like some grizzled headliner in Topeka, Kansas.
You know,
that's
what
a good one.
You know, I always thought it's like a radiologist who's been doing it for 60 years, just looking at it and going like, yeah, that's stage 4. Anyway, but you know, they can't, they don't show any emotion. They don't.
No, just it's
like,
just,
oh yeah, that's invasive. That's stage 4. They'll die. Anyway. there's a place that has really good creme brulee. Let's go there.
That's my daughter. That's a good.
Yeah, but it's
she laughs a lot, but when she really like thinks like, oh, you really, that was a good one. That was a good one. I'm just like, I feel like that's, you've already learned how this works. It's about like, actually sometimes you're like impressed by the craft more than you even want to laugh about it.
Right.
I do think it can go too far. Like sort of like a wine sommelier. It's like, you don't even enjoy this anymore. Like it's just, I do think that you do want to be able to access the laughter part too. You know,
like, are you noticing that your kids have different senses of humor?
We just talked about it the other day. We talked about like how my 9-year-old really is getting into wordplay, and that's where she will be like, that's funny because that word means this, but you said it like, you know. So she's, whereas my 5 and a half-year-old is at that age where all you have to do to make her laugh is like sing a popular song and swap out keywords with the word butt, and that is all she needs.
You know what?
All she needs.
Some of us never left that stage of development.
No. It's but she's like firmly in it. Like it's never. That's like, you know, I'm still in that stage, but I also like wordplay. She's like, nope, not the wordplay. Just sing "Let It Go" from Frozen, but say "Let It Butt." That's all she needs.
Sona, where else can you go surfing and skiing the same day, huh?
I don't know.
Or check out a world-class art museum and then camp at a dark sky sanctuary that night, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you hike through redwoods and then get a luxury spa treatment?
Where?
Well, you live there. California. California, Sona. No matter where
California.
You go across the state, you'll find a way to play. I'm a California resident. So are you. Sona, you are a lifelong California resident.
I'm a lifer. I love this place.
This is a beautiful state. Gorgeous. So many different, wonderful ecosystems in one state. You can hang out by a Palm Springs pool. You know, you can go whale watching. You can go hiking in Yosemite. And then talk about the great cities in California. You get all this amazing food, sushi, whatever you want. They got it in California. Hey, if you can't find it in California, man, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. I made that up on my own. Anyway, I love California. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Today's episode is brought to you by Cap'n Crunch. This has meaning for me, okay? Because I grew up as a child obsessed. My brothers and I were obsessed with sugar cereals. We loved Cap'n Crunch. And then when they came out with Cap'n Crunch and Crunch Berries, it was like Oppenheimer. I saw a white light and I knew that life had changed forever. And true story, I was just back in Boston visiting my brother Neil. And not kidding, he is 2 years older than me. We are grown-ass adults. What do? We sit down at our kitchen table in Brookline, Mass., and we both crack open a box of Cap'n Crunch with Crunch Berries.
Oh, my God.
And we had it together, multiple bowls, and I was so happy.
Oh, it's nice that you have that.
It really is. Break away from the ordinary with Cap'n Crunch and bring back the spirit of adventure to your mornings. Everyday life can be stressful, but I've got to tell you, it's just such a sense memory for me. Not just original Cap'n Crunch, which is great. Then, oops, all berries
yeah,
they came up with.
I remember that.
Usually I don't eat foods that have oops in the title. But when they came up with oops, all berries, I was there. Peanut butter. Oh my God, peanut butter crunch is fantastic. It turns the milk into this cool peanut butter milk. I love it. Join the crew for your next breakfast time crunch venture. That's a word now. Buy Cap'n Crunch's new Cinnamon Crunch now at a retailer near you and learn more at Cap'nCrunch.com. Neil, we made it! Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT, introducing ADT Self-Setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest Cam and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Your choice. Easily install the ADT self-setup security system at your convenience. You don't need heavy-duty tools. And if you do need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Self-setup from ADT grows, moves, and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. It also features Nest Cams. They can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package. These things are getting so smart. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. You can view video of an alarm event and verify or cancel an alarm with just one quick tap. Now, everyone can get trusted security from ADT installed your way with no long-term contracts. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, well, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are all trademarks of Google, LLC.
There's so many ideas in comedy that we think of, and we're in this we've been in this time for a while, the cancel culture of someone getting in trouble for something they said or did that went too far. And one of the things that I've always thought is, well, you do have to have almost like the room where they split the atom to create the heat to generate everything. You need to have a room where you're protected, where you can almost literally say everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everything and anything, because it's the way that comedy is made. I got a call yesterday from a well-known comic who didn't really want to be associated with the idea, so I won't say his name, but he called me with this idea and he was like, Conan, I just got to tell you this idea really fast. I can't do it. You can't do it because it involves Hitler. And I went, okay, all right, let's hear it. And he went, okay. It's the giant Nuremberg rally that's famous, where you cut to the crowd and Leni Riefenstahl shot it. And there's just, you know, hundreds of thousands of Germans in neat rows and they're going crazy. And the Führer's giving his speech and it's beautifully shot. And it's this iconic, horrible moment that shows you how much everybody was enthralled with Hitler. But instead, in whatever year it was, 1936, whatever, coronavirus is hit. So there's a couple of Germans backstage in the high command and they're talking. Someone's got to go tell the Führer that because of coronavirus, instead of 7,000, crazily cheering Germans in the crowd, there's about I want to say 100 people all distanced in the crowd. And none of them want to go tell the Fuhrer. And then they find one sap. They're like, you got to do it, Otto. He kind of, and he's like, oh, I don't want to. He goes in and the Fuhrer is just real chipper. He's like, oh, Otto, how's the crowd? Oh my God. And I was like, well, the crowd is, you know. And he ends up not telling him. But right. I thought, oh, that is a funny sketch.
There's those ideas where you're like, I wish I could do this on stage, or I wish I could do this, but it's either not for me or I don't have a venue to do this in. And I think that like, that's about the comedy brain. Your brain is always working. And then you're like, I have to just share it with another comedian so I know that it's actually funny. And then I can relax. Then I can move on to not thinking about Hitler.
What's it like to not think about Hitler?
I mean, people ask me all the time, like, what's off limits? And I really don't think anything's off limits. I think it's all about delivery and also about who the comedian is. Because like every time somebody goes, comedians can't say what they want to say, I'm like, have you seen Anthony Jeselnik?
Yep.
Have you seen Jim Norton? Like, there are comedians who say the things that we think they're not allowed to say, but they've established that those are the rules of the game. If you're going to come through here, these are the rules of engagement. And I think sometimes people think I would be against those kind of comedians. I'm like, no, I'm for all of it. Just be honest about it. I think the problem is when comics who actually aren't about that life sort of step into that, and then they get pushback, and then they say, I can't say what I want to say. No, but you got to be able to take the heat. And Jeselnik and Norton
right. And
many other comedians can take the heat. You know, I think like a couple weeks ago, there was a clip that went around of Joey Diaz from years ago on the on Joe Rogan's podcast saying something that was like, you know, just a comic being a comic saying, and either whether it's true or not, it's hard to know.
Right.
But he was saying something that if it was true is horrible.
Right.
And so there was this effort to cancel him. And I've listened to his podcast sometimes. He was just like, how can you cancel me? Like, look at me. Like, he was just like, this is who I am.
Yeah.
This is exactly who I am. This is the kind of comedy I do. He says he was joking, which, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Right.
But the whole idea is that he couldn't be canceled because he's like, this is the space that I take up.
Yes.
You know? And whereas like some comedians who, when they get canceled, it's because, well, you don't really take up that space.
Right.
That's
right.
Not really for you.
Right. If you're a prop comic for 25 years, if you're a Gallagher and your joke is taking, you know, this person, tennis elbow, because you take out a mannequin that has an elbow, that has a tennis, a tennis racket duct taped to a mannequin's elbow, and you go, whoa, tennis elbow. Yeah. And then you do a 10 minute hunk on race that really goes over the line.
That's
maybe go back to the props.
I think there's just a natural thing in comedy where we're trying to find the line and just sort of play with the line. But I do think that, you know, the idea of people getting canceled is also overstated.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. People sometimes have to take a break. Like, I just, you know, it's funny. I'm doing all this press. I sat down to do an interview on Extra. Mm-hmm. Just go, oh, you're booked on Extra. And I sat down. And then the interviewer sat down on the Zoom call, and it was Billy Bush. And I was like, whoa, hey, man, how you been? And I'd forgotten that he'd been rehired. It's like, who was more canceled than him?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Extra's not paying him by the hour. I'm pretty sure he has, like, benefits and stuff. So I think I'm just saying, I just came here to say, I think Billy Bush is going to be all right.
Yeah.
That's my main
point. Really? So that's the whole point of the
that's actually the whole point of my career.
You know what? I think you're going to put that on your list of one of the greatest things ever. It's one of the greatest
Billy
things
Bush.
Ever. That Billy and Bush the okay. almond milk and, you know, it's all great.
Yeah. No, I think I don't think there's anything wrong even with people trying to cancel someone. I just think that's part of where we are in society. And if people want to give it a shot, and I've had friends who try to get canceled. I mean, Tucker Carlson tried to cancel me at one point. So I get that.
Wouldn't that be an honor, though?
No, it was. It was. Believe me, I mean, I bring it up every time I can.
Is there a way you can get that in writing and frame it?
No. I mean,
it would be.
I had a whole plan this season of United. If there wasn't a coronavirus, I was going to go to Fox News headquarters and be like, Tucker, I'm down here. Let's talk it out. Let's hug it out. So I think that's just part of free speech. That's part of the pushback. And people who didn't have access to their voices, or couldn't, people who were offended by things who couldn't get their voice out to say they're offended now can. And I think that's part of the price of free speech. But I don't think as many people are getting canceled as people say are getting canceled. The people who are really getting canceled usually involves, like, I don't know, crime, which I think is okay to cancel people over.
Well, that's where you and
I'm not trying to be controversial.
That's where you and I disagree. That got really awkward in here. I'm a kind of a pro crime guy. If you can get away with it, I am a pro crime guy.
Yeah, I understand.
You know,
I
think this.
I mean, my favorite comedian of all time is Bill Hicks.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm sure, I mean, you know, wish he was still here. I'm sure there's things that he said that, like, you know, would get him canceled today. And there's things that he said that I didn't even agree with at the time, but I was like, wow, that's great writing and performance.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I have room in my heart for, like, I don't agree with that. Also, it's funny. But I think a lot of times right now, people don't have room in their heart for, I don't agree with that. Also, it's funny.
Yeah. Anything that, it's called being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's called tolerating discomfort. I sometimes think that's maybe one of the big issues we got right now.
Well, I think there is a sort of, like, there's also a power dynamic in place that I think is legitimate. Like, some people are like, I've never actually been allowed to tell you when I was uncomfortable before.
Right.
So now that I have the ability, I'm going to tell you every time I'm uncomfortable because I didn't have access to telling you I was uncomfortable before. And that's making other people uncomfortable, which I feel like, yeah, but you were never uncomfortable.
Right. Wait a minute. And I think sometimes you telling me that you're uncomfortable isn't going as well as I thought it would.
And that's the voice they usually have.
I'm going to my wine cellar. When I come back, I don't want any more of this discomfort.
I will smoke my Cohiba, I will have some brandy, and we will re-adjourn and have a different discussion.
Let's have a discussion about something that's more comfortable. Listen, I tried this thing about hearing what you have to say, and I think we've done enough.
And so I think that sometimes that's what, there's like this weird, like, well, this person has never been had access to their voice, and they're excited, and they now do. You've always had access to your voice,
right.
But we can't act like these are like both sides are having a different, are having a, the both sides have a point here. It's like, I think that's the thing. I don't want to look like I'm saying that either.
Right. Well, it's too late. I mean, I can cut this any way I want.
That's true.
We're going to take out individual vowels. And when it comes out, it's going to be you saying, I think Trump has done a good job. I think things in race are progressing too quickly.
All lives matter. Yeah.
Let's slow things down a bit. I think that most of these problems were solved in the 60s. Oh, please. This is us having a moment where this, it's, I always love the thing that's so wrong that I can't do. I had a really.
And right now, my brain is like, nope, skip that one. When we're friends, I will tell you those things.
When we're friends.
Once I get a notarized document that says we're friends, I will then confirm.
It is one of those things where that's a riff that you and I would go on for a long time. And if we weren't, it would go much further if it was just the two of us.
Yes.
But that's not bad. We got to go pretty far.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good about it.
I would invest major money in having that cut together and then inserting you saying that clearly altered and then me saying, gee, I don't know. I can't agree with you. I just can't agree with you. And so I'm the more sensitive and in a way, yes. And I'm the one that's more in touch about race. And I'm like going, you know what? I think there's more advances we could make. I disagree, Cole.
I have to fundamentally disagree. I think black people have gotten plenty.
Awesome.
The WB, the UPN. 6 scenes of the Wayans Brothers TV show.
Yeah. Look, why can't you be happy with that? That's plenty.
It was plenty. It was a lot.
For God's sake. Bitching about something, man.
Yep. Always bitching about something.
Okay, if we're going to be friends, and by the way, it's ultimately going to be your call. You have that control.
I appreciate that, but I'm open to it. I'm the, you know, that's what are we doing if we're not building friendships?
Yeah.
Sona.
Yeah. Yep.
That's true.
Well, we're also, there's going to be some ads in here, so we're making money.
Yeah.
Well, no, we got to monetize our friendship. There's a pandemic. What are we talking about? I got kids.
Now, can I ask you? Is your wife a good laugher? Does she think you're funny?
Yeah, our first day we met, I ended up getting a last minute gig at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco, and the first day we met, we were working on a theater show, and I was like, "Hey, lady who I just met, who I think I might have some interest in, want to see me kill at a comedy club when I open with 10 minutes?" And so she came and saw me at the first night she saw me do stand up, and yeah, she's not only a good laugher, she's actually a good comedy writer and a good comedy mind, but I forget sometimes, and somebody will compliment me on a joke, and I'll be like, "Thanks, I remember when I wrote that, I was," and she'll be like, "No, I wrote that." And I'm like, "Oh, then, yeah, that's, when I say I wrote it, I remember when I heard you say it,
yeah.
And then I told myself that I wrote it."
I do that except about having our children with my wife. I'm like, "Oh, no. Yeah, I remember when I had these children." She's like, "What? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess it was your vaginal canal." If you're going to be a prick about it. But anyway, when I brought forth this life using only my seed.
Yes. I've had three kids. I've tried not to be the man that says, "We're pregnant. We're pregnant." Yes, I don't be that guy. No. We're not pregnant.
Yes.
We're having a baby. No, she is. I get access to the baby if I ask.
You get a text that you're allowed to.
Yeah. I'm basically leasing children, but I never, with no option to buy. It's currently, she renews the lease on my kid. Yeah, you can hang out a little while longer.
You've been renewed. You just got renewed. Yeah.
I got a pickup on my children. And we added another cute one because it was starting to get a little stale. We added a new baby. Like, every
so how
show.
Many do you have? How many kids?
Three. I got a 9-year-old, 5.5-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
You got a 2-year-old.
Which is, like I said, I was the only child, so to me it makes no sense at all.
Right.
I don't understand whose idea was
this. No, I came from one of six, so we never talked about it, and I could just kind of assumed, you always assume that you're going to replicate your childhood, so
yeah.
After our second child, I said, "Well, when's the next one?" And she said, "You're not to touch me again." Mic drop, walked out of the room.
But weirdly, there was another kid. Where'd that one come from?
I don't acknowledge that child. That was
you're not to touch me, but your side piece.
It's property on the side of my yard is my side piece.
I understand.
You know.
No, I don't. Like I say, my oldest kid, who's 9, is like half of an only child, because for the first 3.5 years of her life, she was living that only child life.
Right.
And so she still remembers that. And so for her, sometimes when she has these moments of like, because now is the oldest one, she has all the responsibility. And sometimes she's like, "Ah," and I'm like, "Yeah, I know. You had a good life. I know what you're experiencing because I lived that life my entire life." I know. It was good, wasn't it? Yeah. A lot of people to worry about. Yeah. I don't know why you wanted to have all these kids.
You know, I like that you went for it comedically with your wife the first time you met her, because I did the same thing with my wife, Liza. Our first date, we got in a cab together to go and see a movie, and I just went for it. I did the thing I always do, Sony, for me a million times. Yep. I sort of mutter like Popeye. I go like, "Bluh, bluh," and I'll do it in the cab, and the guy would be like, "So you want to go to 34th? And I'll be like, "That'd be a good idea." And I make little noises, and I do it sort of at a pitch where the cabbie can't. I don't think the cabbie can really hear it, but I was like, "Oh, because I'm taking a right. Oh, that's good." And Liz was like, "What the?" She didn't say anything. She just thought, "Oh, he's fucking crazy. He's absolutely fucking crazy." Yeah. But I thought, she needs to know now that this is the deal, because I was very interested in her and was already thinking this is the one.
Yeah.
I need to show her my hideous scar up front.
Yes.
This can.
No, that was the way it was with Melissa, because I had other girlfriends who were like, so because when I started doing comedy, I started dating a woman, and she was sort of like waiting for me to quit, basically. Like,
right.
When you get over this, and then you can take over your dad's insurance business, which was actually a thing. And then my next girlfriend was like kind of into it. But by the time I got to Melissa, I was like, this is what it is. And so either come out with me to the comedy clubs and hang out and make friends with my friends, or I don't know if this can work. And she did all that. So she is like friends with a lot of comedians that I know, and she can hang out and gets what the life is. I'm not living that life anymore, but I feel like she definitely like accepted and thought I was funny and would tell me when I wasn't funny and when I needed to work on that tag.
Yeah, that's the part I can't tolerate. I want
collaboration.
I like hearing honesty. Exactly. This is all ringing true to me.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the part where it's like
people who have your best interest at heart.
I'm going to the wine cellar again.
People who want you to succeed and do better and be a better version of yourself, please, and inspire you to be a better person.
I am as God made me. No, I like to hear really funny, great job, there's no one like you. And then when it gets into this territory of being honest with me emotionally, that's when I have to go to my, you know, cellar and think about things.
Okay.
No, I think you keep me down to earth pretty much. So.
Yeah, I think everybody around you does.
Everybody. I'm surrounded by people who constantly
need that.
Interns on my show are like, well, maybe next time. You know, I'm like, you fucker.
Yeah.
You're a sophomore in college.
Thought this would be better. Yeah. Thought you'd be funnier. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, I always look for optimism, and I know we're in this incredibly intense time. I do, and I hate it when people say laughter is the best medicine, because I respond, no. If I'm really sick, laughter is not going to do shit, you know?
Yes.
So I was at this event, and it was Norman Lear, the late Carl Reiner, and Bob Newhart. And I think it was Norman Lear at one point who just said, and I think it's like Norman Lear's maybe 97 and Carl Reiner's 96 and Newhart's, I think he's only 44. He just doesn't take care of himself.
child genius. He was a child prodigy.
Yeah. And just really needs to get to the gym.
Some vegetables.
But they were all talking and they were all hilarious. And they're in their late 90s. And I think it was Norman Lear who said, I know it sounds like a cliche, but in my profession, I've laughed every day. I've laughed really hard every day, and it is life-giving. And I really believe that's why we're all here. And there's a lot of discussion about where we are and how can we improve and how can we get better. And I do think it's like, well, everyone needs to spend more time with each other and enjoy the things that humans enjoy together, which is laughing. I mean, it sounds laughing and cocaine.
You just made me agree to that. I was like, yep. Oh no, that's the headline.
And when I do the re-editing, I am a big user of cocaine. Okay, come out.
This is not the place. This is not the time or the place.
There is no drug that I have not tried. Oh my God.
I'm down for the party. Oh no.
Who says that anymore? Come out.
Anybody got some? Okay.
But yeah, I do feel like even coming over here today to this studio, which has been boiled and scrubbed of coronavirus, was really looking forward to talking to you. And I thought, we're always passing each other. We've done there's a few times we've had an opportunity to talk. But one of the things I really love about the podcast is really getting to spend some time with someone I admire and who I know is going to make me laugh and I'll feel better afterwards. And so I thank you for that. It really was the whole idea of this podcast is very selfish, which is I just want to I want to force people to hang out with me who I really like. And so I'm really thrilled that you were able to do this.
I mean, I was happy to do it. I've been wanting to do it since it first came out, because I also felt like talking like this is so much better than when you see people out in the world or we're on your show or whatever. Like, this is the kind of way that you feel like you really get to know somebody. And as I've said before, you're someone who I've looked at as like, that's the way to do it. That's the way to have integrity in your career. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sure you also admire me physically as a physical specimen.
Oh, God.
Certainly, that's a part of it. I'm pitching myself as a side piece. And it's been an honor to be the guest on the very last episode of Friend and Needs a Friend.
I can't.
Because I am now the friend. So goodbye, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Show's wrapped up.
You had a great career. Anyway, thank you so much for doing this. And like it or not, you are my friend. And and you're allowed to bail at any point. As Sona will tell you, it gets really irritating really fast.
It's true.
Well, as an only child, I'll leave at any time. That's one of my special
You'll just ghost me, right?
I'll just ghost you. Yeah.
All right. God bless you, sir.
Thank you. We'll talk again someday, friend.
I gotta say, everywhere I go, people are talking about Monopoly Go. And for good reason. It's an absolute hit!
Yeah. I love Monopoly.
People love Monopoly. And look, Monopoly's been around for a very long time. It's one of the oldest board games ever, okay?
Okay.
But lately, I walk around and I just hear like, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? And they say, we're playing Monopoly Go. You can play it with your family, your friends. It's a straight delight. There's always something new to do. Partner events where you can build on each other's boards and crazy tournaments with team events you can recruit your friends for, or you can just compete to outdo them all on the leaderboards. Mm. And when you're not messing with your family and friends, Monopoly Go is always throwing new stuff at you. They have taken Monopoly to the next level. I didn't think Monopoly had to go to the next level, but they did. There's timed events like massive multipliers for all your winnings and challenges like treasure hunts or money sprees that have fun new mini games. Plus, with tons of rewards to collect, like stickers for trading with friends and hilarious emojis that are perfect for gloating, there's always a reason to dip back in.
Yeah.
Man, they cracked it, you know?
They did.
So join the fun. Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all sometimes have issues or things we need to talk about, get off our chest. I have that all the time, don't you, Sona?
I do.
Yeah, and we need people to talk to. And we carry around different stressors. We carry big stressors. We carry small stressors. I was raised in a culture where you're supposed to kind of bottle it up, and I've learned over time that that's not the best thing to do. If you do let things rattle around in there for a while without talking it out, it can affect your life very negatively. Well, therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. BetterHelp's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. A lot of people have a barrier towards getting therapy because they think, well, I don't know, I've got to find the person, talk to them. What if it's not a good match? Then it's awkward. None of that. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Conan.
I'd like to address an issue. You contacted me. No, please. This is not me reprimanding you in any way. People sometimes forget when they listen to the podcast that you do work for me.
Yes.
It can probably come across in the podcast that that I work for you or that we're somehow equals.
No.
You do work for me. And yes. The other day you contacted me. And this has happened, I think, in the past. So the scenario, you went to a gas station.
I went to a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my wallet out and mm-hmm. I put it on top of my car. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to myself, don't forget your wallet's on top of your car.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot my wallet was on top of my car.
Oh, no.
I drive off and then about an hour later, I go in to get my wallet and it's just not there.
So it's gone. Normally you'd think, oh, that's too bad for Sona. But let me tell you something, dear listener. This is bad news for me because Sona has my credit card.
Yes.
She has my credit card, a copy of my credit card, so that when she buys something for me, a certain medication that older men need.
What? Like, wait, what?
Well, I don't know, some sort of cream or balm that an older gentleman who's failing needs to rub into certain areas.
Oh, my God.
Those are some of the things you need to buy me, right? You know, or a special seat that raises the toilet higher so I can get to it.
What?
I'm having,
wait, what?
I don't know. I'm projecting ahead. ahead in this into the future like 2 years. You know, like you buy things for me all the time with my credit card. So my credit card was missing.
Yes.
And I was in the midst of trying to buy something on Amazon. Uh-huh. And you said, grab bars just so I could get into the shower.
Wait, what? Nobody needs to know these things.
I think people should know that although I appear very youthful, I was born in 1914. had a lot of work done. But anyway, you told me the cards, I lost my wallet. I left it on top of my car. And then I think you said you drove around and you did donuts and wheelies and parking lots and stuff. And you,
yeah, I did. I drag raced.
Yeah. You drag raced.
Yeah.
You drifted. You did the old Tokyo drift.
I did.
A lot of people don't know Sona is a street racer.
Yes.
And their only problem is she often leaves her wallet on top of the car and she street races in a Kia. by the way, a little shout out for Kia. We're not getting paid for that. That's free money for
Kia
you.
Kia Niro hybrid.
Yeah, that's right.
You went for the hybrid life.
You went for the hybrid because that thing can drift. Anyway, you go off zipping around, right? Yelling out your window.
Yeah.
And doing wheelies. And the wallet goes flying off somewhere. We don't know where.
Yeah.
And it's got a card on it that has... goes right to my bank.
Two cards.
Two. Oh,
well, because
two.
One goes to your personal and the other one is my corporate card, which goes to your corporate entities.
Right. Oh, so, right. Yes. That's right. That's right. And various corporate entities. What am I, Montgomery Burns?
Yes, you are, actually.
Yes. Smithers. Smithers. Look at this Sona. I like the cut of her jib. Sir, you've been working with Sona for well over 10 years. I don't recall. And you said, I've just blown up all your credit cards. And I was right in the midst. Actually, I know what I was buying. Mm-hmm. I was buying a rash guard.
Okay.
I was buying one of those things you wear in the ocean because I do a lot of swimming these days and it keeps you from getting sunburned.
Yeah.
You know, the surfers wear them.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
So you blew that up because I couldn't get my rash guard.
Yeah.
And now if you lose Conan O'Brien's card, you know, you're putting Conan O'Brien in jeopardy. You know, you're putting Conan O'Brien's family in jeopardy and his finances in jeopardy. And I want to know how you're going to make this right.
Here's the thing. It's not the first time.
Oh, no. This has happened many times and always with hilarious scenarios.
Yeah, I want to say it's happened less than like maybe 6 months ago. I lost my whole wallet.
Yes. You've lost your wallet since I've known you about 9 times.
Yeah.
And it's always a story like, you know, when you are at the carnival and you go on that thing that drops you really fast. I wanted to see what it was like if the wallet would fall faster or I would fall faster. So as it was about to drop, I threw my wallet in the air and then I couldn't find it afterwards. And 9 of your cards were in there, mm-hmm. plus the only original copy of your birth certificate.
Yes.
Sorry.
You know what? You make jokes, but one time my laptop was stolen. It wasn't password protected and every single one of your contacts were just in there.
Now, fortunately, I have, as we've established, I have very few friends.
That was really bad. I actually got really nervous about that one.
Yeah, no. But it wasn't, it's not like I had A-list celebrities in there. Mm. And whatever. You know, I'm really close with Charlize Theron. Oh. We're very close friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if it's more than that, that's whatever. I don't know who put that out there.
I see.
Yeah. She's Charlize Theron. And then on parentheses, it says someday something could happen, even though I'm married and she isn't really close with me and has no interest. It says
not her number. It's like your mom's number.
Yeah, but my mom answers, and those are good calls. Those are good conversations. I was like, hello? Well, I don't know who that is, but do you know Conan? Oh, yes. Well, Conan, well, let me tell you something. He took a long time to toilet train. I'd get calls from his college dean that he had soiled the bed.
It sounds like you were raised by Ronald Reagan.
Well, my mother did once... She once came into my room when I was a kid and she said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. And I was like, Mom, what are you talking about? Well, Yeah.
So what are you going to do? What's the solution?
Yeah, how do we do this? I mean, first of all, you blew up the card, right? So the card is worthless to whoever finds it and tries to extort us.
Everything is in it is really worthless, I think. You know, they can't even steal my identity because it's an old address on my license. Maybe, I don't know.
But yeah. Is there anything in your wallet that could be harmful to me that if found? Like, you have some information about me that would be very embarrassing, I'm sure.
No, because I lose my wallet often, I downsized it. And so now it's very easily replaceable anytime I lose it.
So you basically made it so that your wallet is something you can throw away at the end of every day.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. The one thing that I really do miss is my Costco card, but that I can just go and replace it. But yeah, nothing else is
irreplaceable. I think Costco would be very happy to give you another card.
Why?
They want you to go there and buy a box of Raisin Bran that's the size of a refrigerator. I don't know why people need a box of Raisin Bran that's the size of a refrigerator, but apparently that's what America wants.
I love Costco.
Yeah. You know what I love about Costco? They get the amounts right. They give you a lot of something. Mm-hmm. This is something my wife does that makes me crazy. She's a WASP. She's grew up in this sort of Episcopalian family where they all ate the right amount of food and they purchased an appropriate amount of food that would sustain them for that day. And then they appreciated it and they ate all of it and it was done and they weren't full, like too full. Bullshit.
Yeah.
That's not how I grew up.
Yeah.
My mom, she would go to the grocery store and just buy all this shit and then she would come and throw it in the way they throw meat into a lion's, you know, den of like nine lions at the zoo. And we would all tear at it and gnash at it. And we wouldn't even take the packaging off. We'd just be like, she'd just throw a giant thing in there, like a ham that needs to be cooked. And we'd just start pawing and ripping at it. Oh, God. Yeah, when she introduced us to our youngest, Justin, we started eating him. We thought it was food.
No.
And she was like, no, that's your newborn brother. He's 10 years younger than you, Conan. And I was like, oh. And that's why he still has a... Well, he's got a mangled right arm.
Okay.
My point is,
yeah,
my wife, she will go to the store and she'll come back and she'll buy these great potato chips and it'll be in this little bag.
My wife does that too.
Yes. Thank you.
And if there's a food in the house that I want to eat that she doesn't want to eat, I have to keep it hidden from her in my office because she
like
will
bottles
eat
of
it.
Vodka.
Well, that's a different story. Yeah,
just giant bottles of vodka. That's called alcoholism, Gorley.
Is it? Oh God, it's not her fault then.
Because it's a food I like called vodka. And I need to hide it from her. No, but so you hide your food from your
wife?
It's
not me hiding it because I want to keep it from her. She says you need to take these because I will eat them. But I can't keep food that I like in a pantry where it normally will be.
I don't understand.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't fully either. It's like a cookie. Let's say there's a bag of cookies that I want to eat. She won't let me keep it in the pantry because she's afraid she'll eat it.
Why can't she have a cookie?
Because she doesn't want to eat them, but she won't be able to stop herself.
I get it.
Okay, well, this is the problem. My wife's also one of those people, and it's infuriating, who she eats all kinds of stuff, and she just always looks amazing. And I'm made of, what's the word genetically? Shit. I'm made of shit. And so... And so she's always saying, oh, I got you a treat. I got you, you know, some cheese. My weakness is cheese popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
That is my weakness. She'll find a kind of cheese popcorn where they put 9 popped kernels in a bag, a very small bag. And it says, made with love in Portland. It's Jeremiah and Charlotte's cheese popcorn. 8 kernels are popped and put in wrapping. It costs much more than the actual corn. And then it's lovingly sold to your wife, who gives it to her husband, who eats it in one mouthful. You've seen me eat. I'm a monster.
It is horrifying. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like she's just looking out for you. How dare she? Right?
I know.
My God.
I'm an adult.
Wives.
I should make my own decisions.
Ugh,
you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, did they get my Costco card when they stole your Costco card?
What? No, you don't go to Costco.
I was trying to...
What were you trying to do?
I don't know, just sort of act like I'm more like, you know, down with the people.
Oh, no one bought it.
I had a Costco card about 10 years ago. But I'd go in there and people were like, oh, my God, it's really him. You know, kiss me, kiss me. And I can't do that. That's
weird. I've gone in public places with you. No one's ever said that.
Only happens at Costco.
They think you're the Costco version of Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, there's a Trader Joe's version of Conan. There's like a really high-end...
A Pavilion's
version of Conan.
Yeah.
And I am the Costco version of Conan. I am oversized. No one's that thrilled about me, but there's a lot of me. There's a lot of me, and I last a long time. And I don't mean sexually, because I don't.
No one thought that when you said I last a long time.
No one, and now we are.
I know, I think that's the way I said it, too. And I last a long time. No one who lasts a long time says, I last a long time. Oh, I'll have you know.
Wow.
Well, huh? What happened?
What?
Huh?
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, please be careful with your next wallet.
I will try.
All right.
Well, yeah, I am probably going to lose my wallet again, but I'll try not to.
Do me a favor. Just I don't care what happens to your cards. I really don't.
Oh, thank you but when for it comes, your concern.
Well, okay. Whatever.
Yeah, it's nice of you.
No empathy.
Care.
But anyway, I'm sorry. Mm. Can't feel for others. Sociopath.
Oh, yes.
Well, whatever. Yes. Okay. Small
now
truth.
No, just noises. Okay.
Yes, right. I say things true. Quickly, okay. Whenever. Yeah. No caring. Don't care about Zona. Just myself.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, my card must be safeguarded. And you've got to do something. Okay. Because I'm a national treasure. And if my card's missing, it's like you lost the nuclear codes.
Oh, is it the same thing?
Pretty much.
Is it though?
Pretty much.
So you don't care about anything else in my wallet. You don't care about my insurance card, my license. You just care about your credit card.
Let me be very clear about this. If it affects me directly, I care.
Oh, okay.
If it doesn't, I don't feel anything.
Okay.
I don't feel anything inside.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watch those commercials on TV, those PSAs where they show like, oh, this animal was, you know, needs a home. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, why are they showing this? I feel nothing. I feel nothing inside.
That's good.
That's why I make so many noises and talk all the time to cover up. The lack of a soul. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I think this is going to be a good season.
I quit.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Sonam Ovsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.